This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 25 for May 12th, 2011. And again, it's a Thursday evening, starting a little bit later than we normally do for those out there live. But welcome to the Home Tech Podcast. I've got the regular crew with me tonight. And first off, Andrew Morris out there in Australia. Andrew, how are you doing this evening?
Very well, Jim. Good. Struggling with the cold. It's been...
Yeah, I know. Winter is setting
cold
in.
Cold and heating.
It is here.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you. I'm sure you guys don't get any snow in the winter, right? Do you?
Oh, we get snow within an hour and a half drive away. So our local ski resort's now got 17 centimeters on the ground, which is very
cool. You were telling me about that the other night, and I got to find a way to get to Australia and get some skiing in.
Yeah, you need a business trip to Melbourne.
No, I'll have to figure that out. Well, welcome to the show. Our modding BIOS extraordinaire, Christian Johnson, is out there at bios-mods.com. Christian, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, guys.
It's good. How's Buffalo in the spring?
Buffalo is finally not looking like a winter wonderland. First week in the mid to high 70s. First week I've used my permit and taken a couple spins out on the road, so be careful. And
first couple. I mean, literally first couple, right?
Yeah. So I.
So if you're in Buffalo, watch the roads.
Right. Yep. Especially if you see like a big suburban barreling down the freeway at 60-70. Be careful.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad I'm a couple, maybe 1,000 miles away from you here in Omaha. So yep. I hope I'll send your parents some money for the dents.
All right. Thank you.
There you go. And tonight with a special guest, the cable devil himself, Bill Pullman. Bill, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you bet. Good to have you back on and appreciate you being in the rotation as we kind of have you guys in as guest hosts. About every 5 weeks now, I think it's working. 3, 4, 5 weeks. So, yeah, it's good. Good to have you. Of course, I'm your host, Jim Collison, The Average Guy. And if you want to email the show, you can reach us here, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. If you want to keep up with everything that's going on from a show perspective, you can follow me on Twitter, @JCollison. If you want to look up the show notes, and Andrew does a spectacular job on the show notes each week. Since Andrew, the rent has gone up on theaverageguy.tv since you started the show. It's Andrew does a bang up job, and so if you haven't, you've been listening to the show for a while, and you were having to struggle through my version of the show notes of the past. You might want to take a second look theaverageguy.tv and look at the show notes. So Andrew, thanks for doing those for us. So
no worries.
You can also follow us on Facebook go into the search bar and search the Average Guy Network, and we should show up. And I post all the shows that we do each week. We do not only this podcast, but I do a fitness tech podcast and a financial tech podcast, and those are all found. Those notes are found out there on Facebook, and you can find everything at theaverageguy.tv. So good stuff. And Christian, we're gonna try and migrate that onto a little faster of a server. Is that right?
Yes. Hopefully within the next 7 days, we're going to move the Average Guy over to the same server I run my websites on. So if you go on any of my sites, you'll see they're pretty blazing fast. And we're trying to get it migrated over so that it's not too much downtime, but hopefully we can start getting some real bandwidth out of the site like we should be seeing. So
yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have an RSS feed coming into a feed reader of any sort, that will not be interrupted. So those will still continue. I use a different service for that. So the podcast will still continue to download. At some point, I'll send a note out, I'll tweet out that we're going to take the site down for some maintenance. We'll get that updated to a faster server, and then it hasn't been too bad, but it would be nice if it picked up just a smidgen. So Christian has offered to make that faster for us, and so watch for that upgrade coming up here in the next 7 or 8 days. And Christian, thanks for in advance for
anytime
getting us on a faster server. Of course, the big news this week, you'd have to be sleeping not to catch this, but Microsoft's purchase of Skype. For 8.5, and it starts with a B, right? $8.5 billion, a lot of cash. I was reading up on that today and saw that a lot of that has been cash that was deployed overseas that Microsoft didn't want to necessarily bring back into the United States and pay taxes on. And so that purchase was a way for them to deploy some cash that had been stuck overseas. But Andrew, let me ask you, as we think about the implications of now Skype, which as I look at my Skype window right now, has 17.1 million people using it as we speak. What were your initial thoughts when you heard that Skype? And of course, we use Skype for the podcast, so we're very, very intimate with Skype. What were your thoughts about the purchase?
Yeah, look, my original thoughts were that it can't hurt the enterprise. We use at the moment, we're using the enterprise Office Communicator. They've got a newer version coming out called Link, which does phone calls and voice mm-hmm. chat and video chat and the like. And of course, you know, we all use Windows Live Messenger as well when we're not at work. So to me, it can't be a bad thing. But I sort of wonder if it's I sort of wonder where Microsoft are going to take it to as well. You know, they've not only become taking on a product that's largely used at zero cost to most of the internet community. But, you know, there was an article come out the other day from ZDNet down here in Australia where they're talking about have Microsoft just become the world's largest telecommunications provider as well, given the immersion. I mean,
I've heard that too.
You know, potentially at the moment, as you said, 17.1 million telephone users.
And that's just right now. I mean, that's in real time using that right now. So that's huge.
Yeah, and I mean, not knowing what their total subscriber base is, you know, that's just immense to think how many people may be out there actually using Skype. And, you know, it's not just PC-based now. It's, you know, various platforms. You know, you can run it on Linux, Mac, Windows, Android, iPhone as a client for just about everything.
Yeah, you know, once Skype was repurchased back from eBay, by the original founders, of course, they've spent the last, and that was in 2009, they spent the last 2 years really trying to get Skype on everything. And they have been largely successful in that. And so it's everywhere on everything. I finally got it working on my phone a couple months back. And so it is everywhere. Christian, your thoughts on this acquisition from Microsoft?
Well, I've always liked Skype as something being independent from, you know, Windows Live or the Live platform in general. So I don't know if I really like it from a personal standpoint, but I was doing some reading that the actual way the arrangement is going to be is that it's going to become a division of Microsoft, but apparently the guys who run it now are still going to be running it, but they're now employees for Microsoft. So in some ways, that originality will be kept into the framework. But one of the things that I was reading that Microsoft wants to do is they want to start putting in more support for Xbox and some of these other consoles and things. So we were talking about all these different clients that we're supporting, and Skype dropped support for the Windows Mobile stuff. So I had to get an old mirror link of the latest version of Skype that they had for the Windows Mobile platform. So that was kind of tricky to find, but once I found it, it still works fine with their server and stuff, and I can still make calls. But for me, it'll be interesting to see if they do actually go ahead and start re-updating mobile platforms and stuff. But at the same token, I wouldn't want to see them drop support for other devices, especially because for Microsoft, they're supposed to be competing with Android, not supporting it. So that's kind of some neutral territory to have such a not open, but, you know, widely supported cross-platform application go to something that's very specific in how it runs and it operates. And, you know, not only has Microsoft bought Skype out, but a couple months back, Skype had bought Fring out, and we thought we may have seen some group video return to the Android and other devices with this purchase. And now that Microsoft has its hands in it, now everything is really just up in the air. But I mean, as a service right now, for the most part, as a free service, Skype is phenomenal. And, you know, there's some extent that makes me wonder, like, is this going to get to the point where it's rolling out through automatic updates and then I get a fatal error that I can't update my Skype? Or are they going to keep it, you know, a separate division and kind of let it do its own thing, but just be financially tied to Microsoft? And another thing to think about is whether or not the technology that Skype uses is going to be incorporated into some of these other things like the Live platform, because how can you own Skype and own like Windows Live Messenger and then tell your customers which one is better?
Yeah.
How can you market that?
Serving two masters at that point, right? I mean, it would make it kind of difficult. We, of course, for the podcast, use the group video feature on Skype, and we've been working with ways to try and publish that group video out via Ustream so folks can watch the show live. But it works fairly well. Actually, tonight it's working spectacular, and so we're all able to see each other, and that's working pretty well. We do pay for that. So I paid $70 for the first year of that. And so that's a feature that doesn't come free. Although Skype has not been a profitable company, I think, to date. Christian, what is your use of Skype? How do you use it daily? And are you on it all the time? Is it your primary IM?
Yeah, it's mostly become my primary IM. I used to have the live stuff be my primary IM, and then I just slowly kind of transitioned over to Skype to the point where I have Skype automatically start with Windows, and I'll turn on Windows Live if I need it. So, yeah. But I use it a lot with friends and stuff and for tech calls. So,
are all your friends on it at this point?
Yeah, most commonly, yeah. I mean, it's not like anything like Facebook where you can find just about anyone, but
yeah. It's getting there.
Yeah, it is.
It's getting pretty good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Bill, what's your exposure to Skype?
probably as an instant messenger. Not so much for the business that I'm in. We still use old school AIM as a means of communication.
Yeah.
Does that still exist?
It does.
Yeah, it really does. A lot of old school people. So.
AIM Messenger, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll use Pigeon as a front end, but we'll still use that protocol. And, it's great service. You just worry what Microsoft's going to do with it.
Yeah. What do you think, Bill? What do you think's coming? If you were to look out and predict the future from what you think, what are your thoughts?
I think they would have to keep it separated. You know, they have, as Andrew alluded, they have an enterprise, position. They have a user position with Live, and Skype is kind of its own thing, and maybe try to take off more of the pay service portion of it.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking also that it's going to be real interesting to see what comes to market with Kinect. I mean, you think about it, you got the camera built into the TV or into the console, and, group video conferencing, out of the house. Kinect's, from what I've seen of it, I've had a brief play at the store locally where they've got one set up, and the way it tracks you and then someone else comes into picture and it will start tracking them, if they can tie that in with audio sourcing and stuff like that, you could have a full-on voice conference system for pretty good price.
Yeah. Now, 10 years ago, video chat certainly isn't new, and I've had a camera for a long time, and I remember about 10 years ago thinking, this video stuff is dynamite, and I tried to get all my friends to do it, and nobody would do it. It was the oddest thing. I mean, it took a long time for video to come to the point where people were very comfortable with it. And I think over the last 2 or 3 years, that's really begun to take off. I mean, certainly from our podcasting perspective, the video has changed the game from podcasts because we can all see each other for the most part. Now, right. Bill's frozen on my screen here, but it's still, we can still, see each other and interact with each other. I think, and I'll throw this out, I mean, I just think people are getting more and more comfortable with the idea of a video telephone. I remember Total Recall, right? The movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger about, Mars and stuff. And they did this video phone thing. And I remember thinking, wow, I mean, that's kind of cool, right? And it seemed, thanks, Bill. Bill's back. He's live. And I remember thinking, why aren't we there today? It seemed to have taken a long time to get there. Christian, do you do you're hanging out with the young kids. Do you guys do a lot of video, or is it still all IM old school text?
No, we're getting a lot into video now. I mean, even if you go on like people's Facebook walls, a lot of the posts now have now become like just short video webcam clips that are posted to the wall instead of typing things out.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill. But hey, Bill, unmute your mic. Sorry.
I went from mute to unmute.
you're good.
The lips were moving and the sound wasn't coming.
what's interesting is that both my TVs that we just got recently, the Panasonic Plasma and our Vizio for the spare room, both have Skype applications with cameras and everything on there. So I find it interesting that, you know, if my mother in South Carolina has a TV instead of using a computer, you can actually do a live video chat from your TV set, you know, lean back perception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's starting to hit mainstream pretty hard now, and the rate of adoption will just accelerate exponentially. So while we're all very comfortable with it, we've been doing it for a while, I still think it's kind of odd. It would be odd for my mom to do it. I think she'd do it. I think it still would be a little odd, but that rate of adoption is going to grow astronomically. So for Microsoft to jump in, pick up the engine that exists in Skype, be able to do this technology, I think – for once, and I'll jump out on a limb here, I think their timing is actually really good at this point. I mean, I don't think they're too early. I think they're right on time. I think they paid a little too much for it. I think $8.5 billion, maybe they spent a little too much of their cash. Who knows? We don't know. Christian, you got an opinion from do you think they'll handle it well? They'll crush it? They'll mismanage it? What do you think?
I don't know. Some of their great software, I still think they misadvertise and mismanage. So I guess it's not as much whether or not I think the app is going to go bad as to whether or not they're going to make it more or less popular.
That's a great point, because they don't have a great track record with advertising their best pieces of software.
Right.
And one of those is the ones, you know, near and dear to our hearts, of course, which is the Windows Home Server. And whenever I say that, people still say, "A what?"
Yeah,
you know, and
Windows what? Yeah,
and even like, you know, all these people who use Skype on Mac and stuff, they're gonna see like Microsoft Skype, and they're gonna be like, I don't want that. I don't want any part of that. It was off their computer. So,
well, hey, since you brought that up, let me throw this out to you guys. We did a little bit of this in chat last night on the Home Server Show. Names for this new service? What?
Micro Skype.
Micro Skype, of course. Comes to mind. I think MS Talk came out in that. I called it M Skype, playing on the capital M, capital S, and then the Skype. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on where they might go? Lynx, right? Lynx is the current business offering from Microsoft for this kind of service. Do they blend it in with that, or does Lynx go away and the Skype name stays?
Yes, yeah, Skanks.
I reckon they could go down the path of MS Communicator.
Okay. Yeah.
Or Skype Communicator or something like that. I think they'll try and combine some of the branding.
My thought. Does the name stay? I mean, does Skype go away as a name, or does it? Do they try and capitalize on that brand and co-brand it with a Microsoft?
I don't know. I mean, you can't say you're going to Skype someone anymore if they don't call it Skype. I mean, it's become, I think if you look up, you know, to Skype, it's probably in the dictionary now as a, you know, it's probably there as a noun and a verb.
Yeah. It's like we don't video conference anymore, right? We would say I'm going in for a video conference, right? It's I'm going to do Skype. Hey, NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox all use Skype for their international connections when they're doing news now for real-time production. I mean, this isn't they're not testing it anymore. I was watching, somebody was reporting from where was it? Somewhere in the Middle East, and it was via Skype.
Yeah.
You know, they're using the Skype service for that, for sure.
Yeah, they can't kill the name. It's like you said, it's basically an icon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the same thing with a lot of our news coverage down here. When the Japanese tsunami went through a few weeks back, you know, all the TV coverage, you know, had the Skype logo down in the bottom corner of the screen.
Yeah.
You know, you can't break that branding image, I don't think. Well, not overnight anyway.
No, I think they would be smart to kind of co-brand it in some way and keep that in the vernacular. I don't have a lot of faith in Microsoft marketing, and I think they'll mess this thing up in some way. I hope they don't mess it up in a way that we can't use it anymore. I mean, the group chat has been what makes people – it's what has drawn the podcasters in to be able to do 3 and 4 at least from an audio perspective. You know, you can do as many. I don't know. Is there a physical limitation on the number of audio people you can have in a chat? Anybody know?
Be bandwidth limited, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, audio has always been easy. The video is getting better. It was bad when it first was offered, and it's getting better, but it's certainly moving out into the masses, and it'll be interesting to see where this progresses. Andrew, you're a Microsoft shop there at HP, it sounds like, with SharePoint and some of the you know, some of the features Office Communicator. We are as well. We use those features and are looking at links coming ahead. I really think this will start to play into it pretty quick. So watch out, Enterprise. I think Skype is going to come to the Enterprise, which I think will be great, to be honest with you. Sometimes I use Google Talk. Of course, that's only point to point, and that has been the problem with a lot of these chat or messenger services, is they're only a single point to a single point. And of course, Skype broke that with multi-chat. So
and the other thing that's really nice with Skype, and we found this the other day at my wife's work, is that Skype is exceptionally resilient at going over a bad network connection. So their connection at work had degraded to the point that they couldn't web browse, they couldn't send, receive email, yet Skype was still working, so she could still send me a message to say, hey, what do you think I need to do?
Yeah.
And it needed to be something as simple as reset the modem, but it works over proxy servers, it works if you don't have a proxy server. It's just a really, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, it seems to be really pervasive at getting over a network connection.
How long before hackers start taking advantage of that permissiveness and start delivering components via or packages via Skype?
I think it depends if it becomes a true Microsoft product or not.
So you're saying if it does, it'll get worse, and if it doesn't, it won't be as bad?
I don't know. I mean, Skype's update cycle seems to be, maybe once every 3 to 6 weeks at the moment. They've released a subversion. You look at a lot of the Microsoft product and you look at, in particular, the RPC stack and stuff like that. They've gone through phases where they released, a couple of patches a week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think it'll the proof will be in the pudding.
Christian, are you guys worried about security through Skype at all in your house?
No, not really. It's pretty stable. One of the things I noticed is when you check your port forwarding / firewall configuration, it does forward a lot of UDP ports automatically. So, I mean, it's forwarding, opening, and closing the ports that it's using. So I don't really worry about it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I've never really thought about the security of it. We just use it. Of course, it has some embedded security because, at least for me, I only chat with people I know. And so, it's kind of that – you get that Facebook experience where – you don't necessarily get spam, and now it's getting worse as it gets broader and people are getting tricked into spamming you. But I don't get a lot of spam on Skype, and I don't just accept people at random. I do get messages from time to time. I don't know if you guys get those, people trying to friend you, that it's obviously spam bots or somebody you don't really want to be a part of. Yeah. So. Well, it'll be interesting, guys. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the coming months. If I know Microsoft as well as I think I do, I think when I say months, I really mean years. and I think they will stretch that out. I hope they take good advantage of that from an IP standpoint and really take advantage of everything Skype can be. I depend on it from a podcasting standpoint, so I don't want them to do anything to ruin it at this point. So Microsoft, don't screw this one up. Get it right, put the right people in charge, and we look forward to using it in the future. All right, any final thoughts on that, guys?
I'm good.
Best of luck to you, Microsoft.
Yeah, thanks, Christian.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll Christian, see what comes. Why don't you take a second and run through Christian's Corner?
All right, here comes Christian Corner. So I just have to poll with you guys because I guess I'm still living underground. Has anyone noticed about this u2.be domain that goes back to YouTube, or am I like completely missing
something?
Does
that really work? I thought you were joking about that. That was
No, I'm dead serious. I got an email from my aunt who's sending me this YouTube link, and I'm like, gee, I wonder how she messed that link up. And lo and behold, I click it and it works fine. It goes right to YouTube.
So it's U2. It's U2. So YOUTU.BE.
Yeah.
So is that a YouTube shortener then?
I guess. Oh, yeah, because it goes right to you. It redirects right to YouTube.com.
Wow.
It's like a DNS thing, but it was weird. I'm like, gee, how did she get this link like this? So
no,
I'm wondering if you copy the links for the video now, if that's the link it gives you to shorten it up.
For Twitter, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Well, for any of the shortening, certainly, there are folks worried about those shortened URLs because you can't see them, right? You can't see inside of them for the most part. Right. And so people, I don't know about you guys, I've stopped clicking on, especially on Facebook, in a lot of ways. I've stopped clicking or you know, Twitter, I guess, is probably where it's most pervasive. I've stopped clicking on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Bitly links and the is good and stuff like that. Yeah.
So, well, everybody's competing in that shortening market too.
I think part of this one's it's branding too, because I mean, Lifehacker have done it too. So, Lifehacker, their URL shortener is lifehack.kr.
Boy, that doesn't seem much easier.
It doesn't. It's a bit of a pain, but I think they're trying. I think they're just trying to. Maybe they're trying to crunch the branding and get rid of the .com. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Christian, you stumped us.
Yep. So, well, it stumped me too. I was just, yeah. That was interesting.
Wow.
So.
We stumped Christian.
Yeah.
That's like pretty good. That's write like this down, Andrew. Put it in the
DNS
show notes.
Out there.
Put it in the calendar. to get Christian me. Was stumped.
Christian didn't know about something. That's yep. Awesome. All right. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. Next on the list is Flash 10.3 finally came out for Android. So there's some more improvements there and optimizations, mostly bug fixes and whatnot. But it's nice to see that they're keeping up to date with the Flash rollout on at least Android devices, because I know 64-bit users have still been waiting for the Flash Player 11 64-bit browser support that hasn't really shown any news presence as of yet. And even for Windows Mobile users, we don't get any Flash updates whatsoever. You have to find a mobile browser that has some sort of Flash API built into it, and they're very hard to find. The one I was using was Skyfire for the longest time, was probably the highest generation mobile browser you could have had for any Windows Mobile device, and they closed their service to WinMo too, so now they only run Android and iPhone and all that. So I'm using this new Uzard P beta browser just to get Flash to work, so it'd be really nice if they could natively support that on Windows Mobile as well, but at least they're keeping up with Android.
Christian, when are you going to drop that WinMo phone?
I don't know. It's just as a personal phone, it works great, and it connects with Outlook and all that well. But it's like all these applications are no longer being developed for WinMo. Yeah. So
no, it's just going to be obsolete for you here pretty quick.
Yeah. So I just think that's, I mean, even with Windows Phone 7, it's going to be the same thing. I mean, I just think, yeah, exactly. There's Jim's update on his Android.
Yeah, 10.3. I went out there and checked it. You know what I'm surprised is it says this application does not require any special permissions, which is just unheard of on an Android phone. You know, typically you see a list of we want access to this, we want access to your camera, we want access to the network, we want, you know, the internet, and this one just says no special permissions. That's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. So I mean. It's going to come to the point where even their latest flagship Windows Mobile devices are just going to be shot down because they don't have the developer support that they used to, because they really dropped the ball on some of their SDK work and stuff that the Android just has in abundance. So
yeah. Go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
I was going to say, do you think part of that is because a lot of the developers maybe thought that Windows Mobile was being left behind because 6.5 was there for so long?
Yeah, I don't know if it was that they thought it was left behind as much, or it's just that they did such a horrible job for the developer with 6.5 that apparently from what I've seen from other developers' works, they had a really hard time getting like standard packages that should have worked out of the box to even run on the 6.5 SDK. So I think they just got frustrated with it and said, why am I spending all this time on something I could do in half the time on an Android device and do just as well. So I think in some ways, they just didn't uphold their developer point. Poor WinMo.
I've been really pleased with the update cycles through Android, and those they're coming for a lot of the applications out there. They are coming quick and fast and updating nice features in them. And so I know that Android, I heard a statistic, I think on one of Leo's shows, 400,000 activations, no, 40,000 or 400,000 activations a day, some ridiculous number of Android phones.
I've seen about 500,000 as well.
Being activated.
Crazy,
so, you know, I guess what I'd be interested in, and maybe if you're listening to the show, you could send us a quick note, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. I'd be interested in for the guys and gals who support their family, you know, friends and family from a tech stuff, right? We're the tech guys, helping tech guys. What are your friends and families buying? Are you seeing them move to Android? Or are they going to the iOS? I mean, it's not like all of a sudden people have stopped buying iPhones. Andrew or Christian, if you had the choice between Android and iPhone, what'd you go with?
Android. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
All right. And Bill, is that your iPhone there?
Yeah, I went with this because I needed an app that for business, and it's only right now developed for the iPhone.
Yeah, and Andrew's showing me his Flash on Android as well. You know, yeah, I'll be honest, I see the platforms as very, very similar now. I mean, I don't see one having that much of an advantage over the other. Andrew, you're just...
I think it comes down to simplicity. I think if you're someone who just wants something that works, I think a lot of people are still going iPhone. If you want something that you can tinker with and, you know, make it your own, then Android's a really good fit.
Yeah. Christian, would you go Android just because of the larger or the easier development platform?
Yeah, especially with even now that they're using Java for all their applications. There's a huge revitalization for Oracle. That would be fun to code in. But it just seems much more the update cycle and the OS compatibility and the speed and sheer magnitude of how many apps you can have on that thing without it getting slowed down at all is really cool. I mean, the Evo 4G, even using it occasionally from my dad, has just been a treat. I mean, it does anything you need it to just on the fly without having to give it a second guess. With the Winmo, I actually flashed a custom ROM to it because the one from Sprint just wasn't all that 100% snappy and speedy. And there's you know, chefs, they call them ROM chefs out there that cook these kind of homebrew ROMs. And one of the ROMs that was cooked was really just, it was the same thing as Sprint's ROM with all the bug fixes that they never bothered to take care of and speed improvements. So ever since I flashed to that, it's been a rock solid device for me anyway, but still I would much rather be on a platform that I knew was getting consistently updated.
Yeah, Mike in chat mentions that, and we haven't even brought up RIM, of course, and their offerings from a BlackBerry standpoint. And I don't know, I think they're quietly just riding off into the sunset, to be honest with you, and getting left behind. So, you know, if you're thinking about it, go out and send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and let us know what you're seeing around your support, you know, your unofficial support groups. As far as who's picking up what kinds of phones, and are you getting many phone questions? I don't get, you know, one of the nice things about Sarah sent me a question. What's RIM? That's a BlackBerry, Sarah.
Research in motion.
Yeah, research in motion. That's the phone. That's the phone she has actually. So I lost my train of thought.
Someone hop on Jim's train.
What people are starting to see for phones?
Yeah,
I see a lot of Android.
Yeah, do you?
I was one of the first guys in the office to get an Android phone, so I get a lot of "How do I do this? How do I do that?" from the people who've just got them.
I'm not getting that for the most part. Like I did on PCs, right? It seemed like PCs were a lot harder for people.
Yeah, well, we've just stopped buying Nokia. So about 6 weeks ago for the enterprise handsets, we've just switched from Nokia to the HTC Desire and the HTC Mozart.
Okay.
Of course, you know, I think it's a matter of time until we start seeing the Palm devices come through as well.
Yeah.
Well, and also to keep in mind is the one thing that BlackBerry still has is that every government employee has one. So they're probably still making a killing off that, that other companies can't meet that margin of profit.
Right. And there's, I bet there's some Winmo phones still out there among government and businesses, large businesses that bought into that infrastructure. And you got IT guys that just don't want to change yet. I'm sure of that. I am absolutely sure of that. So it'd be interesting to see how those go. So, okay, we diverged. Christian, get back. Get us back into the deal of the week.
Okay, yeah, moving on to deal of the week. We recently bought a Turtle Beach Air Force PX5, which is in short for probably the coolest headphones you've ever used. They're wireless 7.1 surround sound. Has the Bluetooth and the Dolby playback support. It's $213 with free shipping. So yeah, it's a bit high end. It's a bit pricey. But when you're, you know, if you're listening to music or watching TV at night and you don't want to wake someone up, I mean, these things are phenomenal. I mean, it sounds like you're in a movie theater and the action is just right there. They're phenomenal, especially for over wireless. So that comes with, you know, with the bass stand and any cords you need. But they're very comfortable to wear, and the sound quality is just phenomenal on them. So,
how's the mic on them? I missed the first part.
This does not have a microphone on it. It is just a professional audio headset.
Okay.
How do they do 7.1 in a headset?
They actually have, from the way I understand it, they're actually mini speakers positioned throughout the parts of the headphone, and it's kind of actually more of a, it's not that it's true 7.1 as in there's actually seven speakers in the headphone, but it's a lot of I mean, there are separate seven distinct lines so that you're getting that HD sound, it's used in a, they're positioned very specially and carefully to give you that distortion of space that you would expect if the speakers were around the room.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's definitely nice, and especially, you know, it doesn't have a subwoofer. It's not like you're gonna get, you know, that exceptional bass vibration, but you're still getting the lower range of whatever you're listening to. So
yeah, you can hear it, you just don't feel it like you would with a sub.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, overall, it's not a bad price for the quality that I've heard off those. Check those out if you get a chance. And moving on to Windows 7 customization for the week, I wanted to take a bit of a spin off the Speed Demon side of customizing Windows and talk about some cool skinning apps. Last week we talked about customizing the jump lists and kind of expanding upon your taskbar. And this week I kind of ran over and came across Rain Meter, which some of you guys out there probably used. And it's basically a really nicely skinned version of what Windows gadgets are, except it has plugins and it's very easily skinnable. And there's a lot of people out on DeviantArt who make these fantastic looking skins and desktop backgrounds so that it's like really transparent. So if you have nothing open on your desktop, you just see this Rain Meter with all this different data and feeds and computer stats, and you can just kind of monitor all this in a really nice clean view. It's same kind of drag and drop gadgets that Windows has, but it's presented in a nicer fashion than what's offered in Windows. So I still have some playing around to do with it. For the average user, it's not as intuitive to install the plugins as the gadgets are, where you just hit add and then you're all set. So this definitely requires a bit more of reading the manual and figuring out what's your favorite skin and what features do you want to see. But if you're inclined to make your desktop this news feed of power, then go ahead and check out Rain Meter, because it's kind of like, okay, we expanded our taskbar, we got our start menu, we got our rocket dock launching our icons, so let's see what we can do with that rest of that empty void. Because I personally don't like the icons, you know, when so many people have all these icons just randomly spewed about their desktop and you can't see anything. This is a nice way to still see the desktop background but have data going in and out. So
yeah, they're pretty cool. They're beautiful looking skins.
Yeah. What about double monitors?
Yeah, double monitors, it's the same thing. It's just like dragging another gadget across the screen like you would with the Windows stuff. So it does support dual monitor configurations.
And Christian, that's out at rainmeter.net, right?
.net. It's either .net or .yes, .net.
.net. And it's .net. Free, I think, no?
Yeah, free, and it just came out with their 2.1 beta. So 2.0 is final, and 2.1 is beta. But, I mean, if you take a look at some of the screenshots that they've put up on their website, it's just – it's phenomenally cool. So.
Yeah, they've got some good ones. They do have a big, bright warning on the front of their screen now that says, be careful of downloading some of these skins that have viruses inside of them. So it's that part's interesting. But yeah, that's a very interesting thing. If out at the Home Server Show, there were folks posting, there was a post out there about show us your office space or your office area, your computer area. Mm-hmm. And some guys have, you know, 3-4 monitors set up and they, you know, they had various, displays set there as they were taking the picture. These are beautiful. I mean, as you look at them, if you were just going to leave your PCs on and you wanted to catch somebody's eye, these would be very beautiful just to look at.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had a similar one of those going on too. We actually, the subsonic servers we've been getting a lot into, and I have secretly started developing the subsonic add-in for Syndra as a freelance developer to start the development for Windows Home Server version 2 integration. To have Subsonic just kind of be integrated right into the dashboard, into the clients, and into the back end of actually just automatically installing and configuring the server to go right into remote access and the website. So we actually did a demo where we had the 3 24-inch monitors connected to the ATI card and then go ahead and put a Subsonic server screen on each one, then stream 3 Blu-ray high-quality videos on each screen and then pipe it back over to each other and just overlap them, and it was pretty cool. So definitely some powerful stuff with Subsonic. And, you know, I was impressed too because Veil now has, well, it's
2011.
Windows Home Server 2011.
We're going to break you with that, Christian.
Yeah, it's Veil in my heart. But they have this cool Silverlight integration now on the remote website where it's automatically giving you access to stream your videos and whatnot. One of the cool things I saw was that if I finish recording something off the Media Center box and it goes right to the home server, when you go to that remote access website, you can view that recording without having to transcode it. So it's able to read and play the natural Windows Media format for recording, which is .wtv. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But Subsonic's a really popular application now and getting more so popular. And there's a lot of people on who are using a home server platform who want that kind of integration to the next level. So. Sure.
Yeah, we'll have to do a special show on Subsonic sometime. We kind of dance around it with you. We've really never talked about it as a feature. We'll have to think about that in a future show.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got?
My techie, geeky, what the heck are you talking about aspect for the week is SVN, which is basically revision control and controlling revised files, whether it be from I'm developing a program and want to keep track of my version history, or whether it be, you know, you're writing your 100-page dissertation for college and want to have continuous revisions. So a lot of what I've been working on this week has been setting up the SVN server on Server 08 and then having my client be able to connect to my server. Now, you don't have to set up that server yourself. There's a lot of common ones out there like the Google SVN and whatnot. So one of the things I've been exploring this week is called Tortoise SVN, which is an application that automatically integrates in your Explorer context menu. And then it allows you to take a direct connection to any SVN server you have access to and do all these things. Now, the primary difference that between a regular file system and an SVN file system is that a regular file system doesn't keep track of different versions. It keeps track of the most current. It records it and it saves it, and that's it. And you maybe have one in your recycling bin. This is something where it's continuously keeping track of different versions of files you upload to the server, so that if you ever want to go back or forward in time, you can just pull that file. So that's kind of like a different approach to how we do file systems now, but it's become very useful for companies and for people who are doing these projects and say, okay, we want to all get together and have access to this file. And then, you know, four or five people can make their own edits. And then there's two different styles you can approach it with. You can either say, all right, now merge everyone's individual files to give you your final product, or lock the master file. Everyone gets a read-only copy, and then each one that's re-uploaded is like a separate version or revision number.
Right.
So that's what I've been working on this week.
That's getting that idea. You know, that was another idea. The revision history in documentation has been around a long time too, and most businesses just refuse to adopt it because it's been so difficult to manage at the server level.
Right.
And SharePoint makes a run at that as well. Of course, it's probably the number one document management system, I think, in the enterprise today. I couldn't be sure of that, but
right,
certainly
yeah.
it comes bundled with a lot of Microsoft products and software assurance, so a lot of companies go ahead and deploy SharePoint. But that is another one of those things, Christian, that I think the technology is ready for, but the average enterprise is not. Most people still freak out. You know, we're a little more, of course, we're a little more techie than most. And we sit here and share these show notes in real time. And we've talked about this before. And there's edits going on, and we're editing each other's stuff, and we're adding, you know, YSS comments and stuff in the notes as we're doing it in real time. But if you'd asked in a corporation somebody to sit down and collaborate on a document, I think that would at the best, people would be like, I don't know. I don't know if I want somebody messing with my document.
Or right,
at the
least, exactly.
At the worst, they're like, they start getting paranoid. Like, right. Is somebody watching me when I'm typing? You know?
They do.
Right?
They
and
do.
So it is one of those things, you know, I applaud you. As you move out, you know, through college and get into the workforce, I think in the next 10, 15, 20 years, that's going to become the norm in the enterprise,
right.
But my generation, I don't know, Andrew, you and I, and Bill, you fall in that category. I don't think our guys are picking this stuff up yet, this idea of collaboration on a document. I mean, are you seeing a lot of that, Andrew, in your enterprise?
We do for engineering type and support type documents, so we use SharePoint for that. But
I mean, real time collaboration, or is it, I'm going to write this and I'm going to write this and then I'm going to merge it?
Right, but SharePoint is more really. Like sharing. It's like sharing an individual document. It's not It's not true SVN. The only true SVN solution Microsoft has is Team Foundation Server,
which
is another good chunk full of cash unless you have MSDN. It's actually not even carried on TechNet, which I find interesting. My practical application would say, all right, you're coming out with, you know, Windows 8, Windows 9, whatever. What kind of SVN technologies can you incorporate into the Windows Explorer so that, you know, if this particular revision is corrupted or deleted, it can go to the last revision?
Yeah. No.
That's my question.
Yeah, code management and control, both at the document level and the code level. So there's some advantages.
Our developers use Team Foundation Server, but we don't use it for anything else.
Right.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Anything else, Christian?
Nope. That's it for Christian's Corner.
Close up Christian's Corner. We got to get some music. No one's ever sent any music in. Come on. We need some music to open, Christian. You've got to listen, dude. You're the musician. You should sit down, crank out some music for Christian's Corner, and we'll play that in. So,
All right,
Christian. Thanks for that. Bill, you sent me a tweet earlier in the week that you'd bought a new special product for your home.
Yeah, actually, for Mother's Day, I got it for my wife. So,
oh boy,
right, man.
Yeah. I'll lead this off with I got her a massage and a couple other things before I gave her this gift.
Good call.
Yeah. So I said, you know, she's taking care of our 8-month-old, and we have two labs, so they shed everywhere, and she's like complaining how she's vacuuming every day, which I can understand. You have to. So I got her a iRobot. Roomba, whichever way you want to call it, 760, which is their new line. And I gave it to her, and I thought she's going to crown me over the head with it. But she actually thought it was a good idea. My mother-in-law was really into it, which was really good, which helped me out. So first thing I did, you know, she unwrapped it, and I took it out of the box, and I wanted to see how it worked. And, you know, I had the screwdriver out ready to take it apart, and I'm like, you know what, let me just see if it works first and not void the warranty the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Charged it up. I took it to the worst room in the house, which is our bedroom, because our dogs sleep in there, we sleep in there, and we can never get underneath the bed or underneath other things to get, you know, the dog hair or, you know, whatever might be, dust bunnies might be underneath there. So we popped it in there and let it run. And it's very intuitive on how it's very random. I put a link for, you know, a couple minutes in my son's room. It knows what to do, and it goes around things. It's pretty incredible how it works, and it's very random. You would think that there's no way it's going to cover the room, but what it does is it covers the room multiple times, and it knows where it's going. It's not going to fall downstairs. If it gets close to a wall, it slows down. If it gets to like a leg of a chair, it will actually know it's near a leg of a chair and work around that leg to go back underneath and back out. It was underneath my bed probably for 15, 20 minutes, and I thought this thing was doomed. And it came out and pulled out 3 or 4 labs worth of hair that we couldn't get to.
Wow.
And it actually worked really good. That was the hardest room, and it cleaned it. My mom-in-law said I couldn't clean it better with, you know, a normal vacuum cleaner, and we've been using it throughout the house. It's been really, really good. Very good piece of technology for the home person.
Now, you know, I've heard the complaints on those, maybe in the older versions, was the suction just wasn't great on those. And so they'd cover the room, but they really wouldn't get it that clean. You think that really worked, huh?
Yeah. What we're seeing now, because on the first floor we have tile, hardwood floor, and then area rugs. And we're seeing that it does the carpeting excellent. Very good, no matter what color. You can see that it's pulling out the dog hair, the dirt. You know, when you dump out the bin, you can see actually what, you know, obviously what you're picking up.
Sure, sure.
On the hardwood floor, they have a rubber and a more of a fiber beater underneath, and we're seeing that on the hardwood floor it doesn't pick up as much as the dog hair or things that we can actually see. But as far as pure dirt out of the rug, it does a pretty good job. I would recommend do your normal vacuum once a week if you're a person who has to vacuum multiple times a week. But if you're not that type of person, you can probably vacuum once a month and use this in every room in your house, or get two and do the first floor, second floor.
Hey, Bill, do me a favor. Kill your video for a sec. Just kill it.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We're just losing your audio quality. Now, does this has the base station it sits in?
Yeah, when it's done or it feels that the charge is low, it'll go back to where it started, which has a beacon on it, and it backs up to the charger, parks itself. When it gets fully charged, it will start again if it didn't finish the room or didn't think it finished the room. It comes with two beacons too, so if you have a room without doors, you can actually, you know, basically send a IR signal across the opening and tell it not to go into the next room. Which is nice when you want to just clean one room at a time, and this way you don't burn the battery out before you get one room clean.
Yeah, but will it – I mean, so if you don't put that beacon in, will it just automatically go find the next room and start vacuuming?
Oh, yeah. It will think it's part of the house, yeah. So you definitely want to use that, and it comes with two of them.
So its goal is to clean the house.
Yeah.
And it runs – how long does it run on a single charge?
What we're seeing now as of today, it ran for about 60 minutes in one room, a heavily trafficked area, which was wood floor and carpeting. It ran about an hour before it parked itself and recharged itself, which is about more than enough to do the room, your average size room.
And then will it, when it starts again, does it try and do that room again first before it moves on to other rooms, or does it start going through the rest of the house after it's recharged again?
Yeah, the one problem is you don't know if it finished the room if you're away, because you can schedule this to work, do this while you're at work.
Yeah,
you know, in that room.
Right.
So you're not sure. Well, is this room too big that it just parked itself because it had a charge, or did it just park itself because it was done?
Right.
And normally you would have to hit start again or clean again on the button on the top. We're still working through that portion of it, but our rooms aren't more than 20 by 20 at most. Most of the bedrooms are much smaller than that, so we're not coming into that issue.
Okay. And let's see, Mike had asked a question in chat. How much does the dirt collector area keep in it? Is it a pretty healthy size, or do you have to change that frequently?
If we think of it as a Roomba as a Pac-Man, you take its mouth out, it's about that big, and you can get another one that doesn't have the HEPA filters, but it adds more volume to it, especially if you have a lot of pets. You can buy that. That's an option, which probably adds about 20% to the bin. If you're using it the way you should be, after the first run or after your first vacuum and then you use this, you should get through a room with doing it once. If you leave and schedule and it's a dirty room, you probably have to do it two or three times. But again, it depends on the size, the traffic, type of pets or anything else you have in the house.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Andrew, you got a grin there. You talking to Michelle about that thing?
Oh yeah, I just sent the link across to Michelle and she says, "Why are you sending me the picture of a vacuum cleaner?"
Yeah.
So now, it's kind of cool. They're I've just found them online here in Australia and the 760, which I think is the one you sent the link to,
probably
builds.
a little pricey for vacuum. Christian, yep. You were going to say something?
Yeah. Now this, I assume it doesn't. This doesn't do stairs, right? It doesn't navigate itself downstairs.
It will keep itself from falling over, stairs, but it will not obviously do stairs. No, it's pretty big. It's it's a good 2 foot across, so it's a good size.
Yeah, Bill, you'll have to keep us updated on that. Mike out in chat had said he'd be interested in hearing from you after you've had it for a while.
Yep.
And how that works. From a stair standpoint, right, you've got a little transmitter that you put at the stair so that it won't go down the stairs. Is that right?
No, it knows. It has a sensor.
Really? Okay.
It knows that it's getting close, and then it stops and turns around and does its thing again. So you don't have to worry about stairs. Only openings where you want to keep it contained.
Okay.
And then we're going to get the iScuba next.
Talk a little bit about that. The iScuba does what?
It's actually a smaller version. It's only about 6 inches in across, but it's taller, and it actually will wash and clean wood and marble, tile floors. It's made for the bathroom, so you can get behind the toilet and commode and whatever else you might have in your bathroom. So if this goes well, we'll purchase that one. It's a lot cheaper. I went for the more expensive model because I knew our house needs it because of our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So to give it a fair shot, if you read a lot of the problems with the Roomba, you'll hear that the battery doesn't last. Like people just have a small room and they take it, and just like any other battery, if you don't decharge it completely, it gets a memory. Possibly the problem with this, I don't know, but supposedly has a newer battery. And same thing with the iScuba, which will do wet and dry in your bathroom or any floor.
That's cool.
Yeah. So wife acceptance factor, Bill? She's all in it?
Yeah, she's all into it. Her family's more into it, I think, than she is. But today was the first day she actually moved it from one room and cleaning one room to another. So we'll see if it makes it upstairs tomorrow see how much she's going to use it. I use it the most this past week, and she used it about two times on her own. So we'll see. So far, she's not mad, so that's what matters.
Now, when you say you used it, you started it?
Oh, because I needed to figure out how it worked.
Okay.
Yeah, I used it through all the top floor, except for this room, because it would pick up every screw and nut and solder piece and everything else I use here.
Now, did you find yourself following this thing around the house? I mean, so would you start it and then follow it because you wanted to see what it was doing?
I actually started it and laid on the bed and watched it go just to try to figure out what the logic programming was for the Roomba. So it's actually pretty neat.
Interesting.
How noisy is it?
It's not quiet. My son can sleep through it, but it's nothing that you would, it's obviously compared to a vacuum cleaner, it's minuscule. But it's still a little noisy. It's not loud at all, but it's a little bit, makes a ruckus.
Yeah.
Okay. So you couldn't run it at night?
For us, you know, adults, yeah, you could if you had it on another floor and not have an issue.
Okay.
But, you know, the last thing I want to do is wake up my son in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And if the door is closed, it's going to act like it's a wall. It won't bump into it. It's not going to make a noise when it runs into it.
Right. It has a bumper. So it sees the wall and it slows up to it. And then the bumper pushes in and then it will turn and either go back another way at 45, or it will follow the wall until it hits the next corner. So it's kind of intuitive.
Do you think, does it learn then, eventually, does it learn the dimensions of the house and find better ways to, or more efficient ways to clean the floors?
You would think, and if you read through the documentation, it's only as it tries to learn while it's cleaning that one room, but it doesn't retain anything.
Oh, that would be a great application on there. It'd also be fun, somebody said in chat, to put one of those X10 wireless webcams on there. And,
yeah.
And have that, and then you could log in from work and watch your vacuum cleaner going around. Going
until
around
it goes
house.
Underneath your bed and knocks over your camera. But, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of hacks for this, too, and I haven't started reading that because then I'll definitely void my warranty. But there's a lot of hacks, and they encourage development if you go to their webpage.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Nothing that I've read of, so I can't really tell you anything about
it. Yeah, I think that would be one of those – if the base station could upload what it's learned about your house and build a dimensional map basically as it's vacuuming each time.
Right. Or you could download a map to it.
Yeah. And then it would – each time it goes out, it would get more and more efficient and not have to – you know, especially with the battery being like it is.
Right.
You would want that thing to run. So, you know, say after the 10th or 15th time, it runs the most efficient route, especially since the floors are cleaned, right, regularly with the thing.
Right. Right. Sure.
Yeah. No, that would be great. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I figured it was very good for this podcast.
No, it's perfect for that. That's exactly –
something different.
When I started this idea of the Home Tech podcast, that was what I was hoping for is we would do – you know, we're kind of PC heavy because we're all nerds, right?
Right.
But this, that's perfect. That's exactly what I'm looking for. You know, anybody else out there, if you're listening to the show and you've tried this before, shoot me a note. I'd be interested in maybe a photo of it. And what your experience has been podcast at theaverageguy.tv. And that'd be pretty cool. I know from Christian's standpoint, Christian, this would get you out of vacuuming chores, right?
Surely. Too bad they don't have one for doing the lawn.
Hey,
no, don't say that. They do.
I bet they do. I bet they do.
Not that company, but a different one.
Yeah. No,
but
I know.
It's a liability. I think they yanked it off the market last year.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. Well, good work, Bill. Appreciate that, and keep us posted on that as you learn or you hear or you find out new features on that thing. Do you think does it ship with some way to upgrade the firmware on it? Do you know?
Nothing in the documentation, but obviously there has to be because people are making, you know, I guess adjustments to the logic in there. So it's something I'll explore as we get the house clean and I get a second one. Then I can break the first one.
Christian, this might be an area that BIOS mods could take on and change some of the firmware for the vacuum.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
That could be big.
Those are some uncharted waters. Right there.
Have a little section on your website.
The Roomba firmware. I like it. Hey, speaking of some cool tech, Andrew, you dropped in here this idea of the site called Mention Map. And I kind of overlooked it in the notes, and you were like, oh, no, you got to see this. So why don't you talk a little bit about what this Mention Map is?
Yeah, something I found the other day. It's another one of my useless sites or useful sites, depending on how you want to look at it. Mention Map, when you go to it, it asks you for your Twitter username. So you pop in your Twitter name, and it goes out to a Flash application that then maps out who you're talking to on Twitter and what you're looking at and then who they talk to. And if you hover over yourself, it'll show you who you've been talking to recently and the frequency of your mentions to them. And then it'll show you hashtags so you can click into – if you click into a hashtag, it'll then tell you who's been using it. And if you click into it again, it'll take you out to hashtags.org, which is one of Twitter's trending applications. So it'll show you, you know, frequency and how often it's getting used and where it's getting used and by whom. And it's just a really interesting little
little site to show you how Twitter's working for you.
Or, yeah,
where you're talking to and who you're talking to. And
I think most of all, it kind of exposes your, you know, who you are interacting with on Twitter.
It doesn't show what you're saying. It just shows what your interest is, I guess.
Yeah, a social map, right? And,
so
it brings in kind of your more popular. So I'm looking at, I clicked on the hashtag Runkeeper, and you and I both use Runkeeper, and so it immediately tied you and me and Runkeeper together. And then, of course, around you, I see some of the guys that you know are around your Twitter ID. So some of the guys I know, and some of them I don't. But it would be a way for me to drill down on, you know, if I wanted to follow some of the folks that you follow, I think that's what it is. I could go down there and in a map see it.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to see just how quickly it grows out. It's almost a degrees of separation via Twitter too, because it'll draw you lines. Well, it shows them as a grey line, but if you click on someone who then has a common follower, it'll show you a grey line that joins those Twitter users as well.
Yeah.
Well,
the display of it is very
kind of scary too.
Yeah,
in a way,
the way it throws it out there. Christian, are you on? You're on Twitter now, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And are you out there messing around with this thing? Is that what kind of interest does it show for you?
Not a lot. I actually haven't really touched it in a while, so I may go back and do some creeping around, but it's not really like a click point for me yet.
I tell you what, Andrew, the fascinating part of this is the way it builds these maps for you.
It's very organic, isn't it?
It is, and it's like watching a train wreck. You just can't take your eyes off of it. So so I clicked on my buddy Dennis, and Dennis has been interacting with us via Twitter and on the show. We've read a couple of his emails and tweets. So I click on him, and it ties him to me, and then out pops a bunch of and not like all at one time, right? I mean, one like so Paul Thrott popped into that chain because we both follow him, and then 10 seconds or so later, about.me pops in, and it's just dynamically building this map. That's really cool to watch.
Oh, yeah, it's phenomenal.
It's kind of addicting. So that website, apps. And I'll spell it asterisq because that's not a real word. .com. And and you can go out there and mention, or just Google mention map, MAPP, MENTION, MAPP. And yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we'll pop it in the show notes too, because it is a little bit of a curly one to get out in a podcast. So it's for all of you who are out there driving, have a look at the notes when you get home.
Look at it. I wonder if you could get it on your Android phone.
I don't know.
It's flash based, right?
Yeah, it is. It's flash 10.2, I think.
Yeah, I have to try that.
They do. If you look back at the company's website, and I presume you pronounce it as asterisk or asterisk,
right? Asterisk
or something, right. Something like that. They look like they do mapping of websites as well. I'm not quite sure how that'll work, but if you look, looking at their site, they say they build interactive graph visualizations for web applications. So
no, it's a great way to show that data, that Twitter data.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Interesting hashtags. Bill, have you do you use Twitter much?
No, I use it actually just to basically aggregate all my news together. You know, I put on who I think can give me what I care about. So when I saw actually Andrew tweet this the other day, I checked it out and I'm like, well, that's interesting. You know, you kind of see what your realm is as far as what you care about.
Yeah. Or at least who's around you. And I'll be honest, as I'm, you know, I've done a little experiment on Twitter where I just add people to follow. And that, if you ever want to increase the people who follow you, start following other people, because a lot of people just automatically follow you back. Right. And as you get above 200 or 300, it really, at least, especially, you know, Bill, you mentioned the news sites. My feed is unreadable now if I'm trying to read it on Twitter, because I get three or four updates a minute on that, and it just keeps, you know, if you subscribe to TechCrunch and Lifehacker and some of those other sites, and for guys who are posting a lot, yeah, you can't keep up with it. I mean, I'll come back from lunch and I'll have 800 updates.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes it gets us too much, you know, and that, you know, you're missing all the things that you should care about.
Right. Well, and that's where we talked about this a couple weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago, about this paper.li, this Twitter aggregator. And that is one of those tools that I don't think it's perfect, but I think is getting to the point where it is learning or trying to learn what your most important feeds are, what you're most interested in, and aggregating those up into a more readable format.
And that's what that Zeit app also does. If you have an Apple or an Android, it will actually look at your Twitter feeds and who you're following, and actually, you know, aggregate that into a magazine, which you can just peruse through and flip through. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is cool.
That's what it does.
So, Christian, you just have no need for Twitter, right?
At the moment, only unless it was something Biosmos related, but even that's kind of minimal. So
it's kind of interesting. Really. And your friends are in the same boat, or are you kind of an anomaly?
I don't really know any of my friends that use Twitter. So.
That's interesting. See, that interests me because – It's my generation or below, a little bit below, that are kind of hooked on Twitter right now, right?
I mean, right.
And the technology enthusiasts of all the podcasts I listen to all do Twitter, and there's a lot of tweet this and that, but my kids don't use Twitter, and
right.
You don't use Twitter, and nope. I'm wondering how that. But about your Facebook usage is picked up though, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, that's like standard for everyone, but Twitter's not really around.
Interesting. That's just an interesting trend. I'm wondering how that bodes for Twitter as your generation, you know, makes its way into college and then into the workforce. Does that change? Did Twitter miss your generation?
I'm wondering if Twitter's becoming more of like a technology outpost for these people who want to promote news as opposed to a social network as much as a news network, you know, like who heard it first.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you. I think that's what it's becoming very, very quickly. Very few people try and be social on Twitter because it's so hard to manage.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Good stuff. All right. I want to hit a couple quick topics and then we'll wrap this thing up. We've blown past our hour. But I want to do that. One of the things we mentioned last night on the Home Server Show is that the Windows Home Server 2011 online evaluation is out there and is live. And so if you're wondering what this Home Server Show or Home Server product is that we keep talking about and you've never tried it before, this online evaluation really kind of creates a virtual desktop for you to try both the client version and the server version of it. You can't upload any data to it. But it at least gives you the experience. Andrew, did you get a chance to get out there and try that?
Yeah, I was having a bit of a crack at it at work the other day, but it didn't want to run through our proxy, the application. So I ended up going back to just using my 2011 home server and an old laptop that I'm playing with at the moment.
Yeah, if you can find the old RC, if you want to track that down, that's still very usable if you just want to try it out. But this is kind of cool if you don't have any extra hardware. Christian, did you try that yet?
I'm actually loading it up right now. App cannot be started. Contact application vendor. So that works really well.
Fail.
But on another note, again, here we go with my Microsoft rant. A, what is whole systems?
Yeah.
B, why is this on some forlorn site that I have never seen related to Microsoft before?
Yeah.
Yeah. And C, why doesn't no one know about it?
I know. Isn't that crazy? The to answer your B question, they are migrating it to a Microsoft branded site here in the next couple of days, but it did start in a beta form on this kind of obscure website. So
it's strange.
Yeah, Bill, did you get a chance to try that yet?
No, you know, I have the test server running, which I'm porting everything over now, so I haven't played with it. I heard last night, so you know, it sounds interesting.
It's kind of fun. It's a good idea. I think the implementation of it's a little weak at the moment, but hopefully they'll just continue to improve that VM that's out there and make that better. Andrew, you dropped a note in the show notes that Angry Birds can now be played within your Chrome browser. Is that just Chrome specific?
No, they say it runs in Chrome, Internet Explorer, and the current version of Firefox. So,
and if I wanted, I've never played Angry Birds, by the way, but if I wanted to in the Chrome browser, how much would it cost me?
I don't know. Actually, just I only saw it about 10 minutes before we started show. I'm not sure. I think it's still in early beta. So,
okay. Christian, you played Angry Birds?
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I've had some iPad dealings with it. It's pretty neat. I gotta admit.
Yeah, Bill, are you you played it? Hooked?
Yeah, I played it on the iPad once or twice times 100.
one or two hundred times a day.
Yeah, I'm an old school games geek, and I just got away from it all, and now I like played that, and you just can't, you know, not that you can't stop, but anytime you got a free second, you pick it up, and you're flipping birds at stuff and pigs. It's funny.
Yeah, that's funny. My wife just
said, it is a very cool game.
Sarah just sent me a note. She said Angry Birds is to this show what Drobo is to the home server show. if you listen to the other show, you'll know what we mean.
You can actually play it right now for free.
All right.
The beta. I just logged in there.
Beta's out there. We'll drop that link in the show notes, and you can go out and give that a try. Let's see.
So you ready for the next part?
Yeah, go.
Now I got the evaluation to load. I have the OS up, and it wants me to give it a password, and I don't know the password.
Oh, it's pass, P-A-S-S, at word one.
Where'd you find that one?
Okay, so it opened two windows for you. The one behind it is the actual manual. And
of course.
The third page of the manual is the password. Yeah, it's totally not intuitive.
But I just want to comment that this is new technology right here, because the evaluation stuff for like Office 2010 and like even their Windows 7 roadmap stuff that they have right at the Microsoft website is kind of like a dumbed down, like fake looking version of what it actually is. This is the actual full OS that I'm evaluating right now.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's not a bad eval. The thing I would knock, of course, is you can't add your own data to it, so you can't evaluate in that way. I did add some backup drives to it, and there's two available that you can add them to the pool. I did migrate some folders and some other things. So there's some things you can do with it. They don't give you a lot of space in the eval to mess with. Of course, you don't have a lot of data to fill up the space, so you know, you're fine there. But it is a full VM, so you're on a server somewhere messing around with an actual install. And so if you wanted to try out 2011 and you didn't have the hardware to do it, not a bad way to do it. It might bode well for the way we evaluate software in the future, especially at the OS level. So I think that, you know, it took me about 2 minutes to find that password. And I almost gave up on it until I read Andrew Edney's post that said where it was at.
Yeah.
I wonder what they're using in the back end. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad little deployment, but you know, Christian makes some good points. It's on this weird server that's branded weird, that it's at this weird site. So anyways, we'll drop that link. If you wanted to go out and evaluate the Windows Home Server product, you could absolutely do that. So, guys, we're at the end of another show, and Bill, I appreciate you coming out tonight and guest hosting with us. It's always good to have you out here, and thanks for your info on the Roomba.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's very cool. So keep us in. Seriously, keep us the next time I think we'll have you. We need to get you scheduled. We'll talk about this when we get when we wrap up the show here. But we'll get you scheduled for, oh, maybe early July, and by that time you'll have a good update for how that thing. Hopefully, it's still working for you.
Yeah, I hope so.
In early July, so
perfect.
Great to have you on the show. I'll remind folks if they want to contact the show, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We are getting some emails in, and it's always good to get your feedback on what we talk about, topics you want to hear us cover, things you'd like to hear us say, questions that you might have for some tech guys. Send those things in, and I will share those with the team, and we'll get back to you. Again, you can find us on Facebook as well, The Average Guy Network. Just search for that, and that will get you there. Andrew, great having you out tonight, and Skype was stellar all night, and I appreciate that. And again, we'll encourage folks to take a peek at your fabulous show notes that you've done. Christian, I know you're getting excited about the end of a school year and an opportunity to do tech all summer long.
Oh, yes.
What's the first tech project that you're going to tackle once school's out?
Finishing up the Subsonic Inn, because I have to have it done by June 30th for reasons. I don't know if John Zedler has disclosed upon the internet yet. But
you don't have to. NDA.
there's that. And I'm going to go ahead and port the Wake on LAN Inn over and do some just some general coding with the new .NET 4 framework. So.
Oh, good. Well, you'll have a busy summer. We'll get a little more of your time.
Yeah,
it's always a crunch to get you in, but it'll be good to have. This will be the first summer we've gone through with this podcast, so it'll be kind of fun to talk about some summer stuff and watch you in full tech gear. And again, watch the site over the next week. We'll get it upgraded and hopefully see some speed improvements. And you know, I'll put a call out there too. Dave did this on the Home Server Show, but if anybody wants to do some technology blogging, but you don't want to start a whole blog, I'll basically take anything and we'll drop it on the site, and it could be a good place for you to give blogging a try. So I'll say that you can contact me and we can go from there. So guys, thanks again for, it really isn't. You just kind of write what you're passionate about and call it good. Bill, you know, that Roomba, that'd make a nice little post.
Okay. I'll squeak out a couple minutes a day and try to figure that out. I will.
Just a couple paragraphs. You know, it doesn't have to be a big deal.
Can it be video only?
It could be. That'd be kind of fun. We'll throw it on YouTube.
No problem.
We need the video with the Roomba going around the house with the webcam on the top. So
that's it.
Guys, another Home Tech podcast is done, and we'll see you back here next week. If you want to listen to the show live, you can join us Thursday nights, almost always at 7 o'clock. Tonight we were a little bit later because I had a graduation baccalaureate to go to, but almost every week, 7 o'clock on Ustream. You can come out to theaverageguy.tv/live to listen to it live. Thanks for you guys out in chat that were out there tonight. And thanks, Sarah, for leading the renegades out there as they do chat. And we'll do it all again next week. Good night, guys.
Night, guys. Take care.
Good stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Sleep. This virtual home server thing's on Hyper-V. I wonder how they've done it.
Really?
And is it a? It's got to be a separate instance every time, though.
Yeah,
because there's five of us in there, and then you have the Jim. You were talking last night that they had it on a PC you can use as well on the other side.
Yeah, there's two, right? So there's the on the top, there's the PC, and on the bottom, there's the home server. So over on the right in the screen, it'll say client and Windows Home Server, and you can flip between the two. I didn't mess with the client yet, but I imagine the client experience is to give you an idea what that dashboard looks like.
Mm. Did you get a client called Belinda PC?
I did. Isn't that funny that they'd call it Belinda? I mean, obviously that's someone on the team who just put their own name in there.
Was she in the Facts of Life?
Isn't Belinda that Microsoft isn't that a Microsoft name? That sounds like a Microsoft name. I'm pretty sure it's a Microsoft name.
Somebody Google it. Let's see if there's some significance to that. So you don't think it's just somebody on the team, huh?
I don't think so. Belinda. Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Melinda.
Well, that's Bill Gates' wife.
All right.
There could have been a shot right there across the bow.
Oh, yeah.
Belinda Microsoft.
I'm not overly impressed with 2011 yet, I must admit.
I love it.
You need a reason to go to it, I think.
Yeah. Windows Home Server version 1 raped our hard drives into pieces. Yep. Scope version 2.
I think it's great. It's fast. It does media excellent.
It
as long
is
as you
fast.
Got the hard drives, you know, I can't see why.
I hate. I gotta admit though, I hate Drive Extender not being there, because it's like you wanna now you have to like separate your shares out across different drives. It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, RAID 5 handles that, but it's I know not true backup. I know.
Bill, you sound like you've been beat down on.
Every time I say RAID 5, oh geez, it's not true backup. Okay, I'll just keep my videos on it. I can re-rip them.
How much heat in you have you taken? Sounds like maybe you've taken some heat in the forums for that.
Yeah, that and then the IMs and everything like that. You know, how are you going to back it up? You know, just because I have, you know, two terabyte, you know, drives for my one RAID, and then I got another, you know, 6 terabyte going in mirrored just for my data I care about. It's like, oh, it's not true RAID. I mean, it's not true backup.
Oh, Jim.
Yeah.
I was just checking the show notes. They got Security Centrals working on Home Server 2011 again?
No.
So
really?
It's the beta 2.
Oh, the old, yeah.
So if you go, if you
oh,
can find
right.
an old copy, and I think I actually have it.
Yeah, I have that copy too.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think I put it on my home server. Let me see.
Can someone drop it into the podcast
shared
folder? Because I'm running McAfee 8.8 on mine.
Let me see.
Well, I have the x86 version. So, but this works on version 1 for
software.
Sure.
Software.
Beat Jim. I'm going to beat you.
Why?
Come in for
running,
the download
I'm
link in
I'm
first
McAfee
place.
8.
What?
Smackdown.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's just dropped it into a public drop.
Oh, okay.
I'm running McAfee 8.7 on my current version 1, but the version 2 I've gone to 8.8.
And that's another whole story.
All right, guys, I got to run.
All right, Christian. Yeah, it's late.
Early wake up call here.
Yep. Thanks, Christian.
No worries. Yeah, no problem. Take care, guys.
All right, have a good night.
See you, mate.
Night. Bye.
Right. Take care, Christian.
So you need the X64 version, though, don't you?
For version 2.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have that, I don't think. Let me look here.
Zadla might have it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he does.
You know who has it? No Control. Mike. Martis.
Martis?
Yeah, Martis has got it. He was talking about it last night. I'm sure we can dig that up.
But how do you prevent it from upgrading? Because doesn't it want to automatically upgrade to the new version?
No.
No.
Okay.
But it does. Now, I don't know for sure, but it does get the updates from Microsoft. But now that we've exposed it, they'll probably shut that thing off.
For sure.
Just like they did TechNet.
They cut us down.
With TechNet, you know, it used to be 10. You'd get 10 copies of everything, and then Paul Thurrott went out there and advertised it, and everybody went and bought TechNet. And TechNet, and overnight, they did the shenanigans where they went from 10 to 2.
Uh-huh.
Bastards.
And I wasn't smart enough to write down enough numbers that I didn't use, you know.
Oh, Mike's talking about Unraid. Yeah, you know, here's the pattern I'm noticing among us home server guys, right? We've all, since DE has been pulled out, we've all found the way we're going, right? And while we were talking about this, I got a note from Sarah on Skype. She's like, I smell the D word coming, right? So we've all found what we're going to do. And then every time we talk about it, we mention it. So Mike Geek Accountant has come up with his Unraid. Bill, you've done a RAID 5, along with a bunch of other people. I always talk about the Drobo, so it's just funny. We continually talk about the same thing. Like enough already.
Enough.
Enough. So, all right, Bill. I actually want to. I think I want to start with your Roomba experience.
Oh boy. No, it's actually really good, though.
Yeah, no. So I'm kind of interested in that. So we'll go. I'll open the show. I will introduce you guys. Little chit chat. Let's do this. Let's start with the Skype, the Microsoft acquisition of Skype. Talk about that. Feel free to. You know, Dave likes to save his features to the end. I think there's probably a lot of opinion. Christian, you got an opinion on that, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of figured you would. So, you know, I don't want to dwell on the whole show on it, but let's just talk a little bit about it and how it makes sense. I'm kind of interested in how it affects us, you know, not now, but what we project, some things that may happen. Of course, we're all big Skype users. Not everybody uses Skype, but it's getting more and more prevalent, especially in the media. They use it a lot. So then Bill will come back and talk about Roomba.
Okay.
And then we'll do Christian's Corner. Andrew, let's see, you have Skype, and that's what you put in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Andrew? And then if we have time, we'll talk about 2011, Angry Birds, and the UPS link that I put in there. I had two opportunities this week to have a UPS work for me. So.
Wow.
Yeah, Bill.
This, you know, it was funny. I hit the play button on Ustream just to get us see what it was doing.
Yeah.
And the commercial was the iScuba, which is the bathroom version of the iRoomba.
Really? They have a bathroom?
I swear to you. I was laughing so hard.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Whose bathroom's big enough?
No, it's really small. It's really small. Wow. It's tall. It's not like the other ones.
That's crazy. All right. Bring that up. That'll be interesting. Okay, we are on. This is number 25, and today is the 12th.
Have you had a look at that mention map?
Me?
Yeah, the one that I threw into the notes?
No.
I looked at it when you tweeted it.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
Let me.
Goes to show that there are people out there with way too much time on their hands to code stuff like that.
So you start with your Twitter name?
You put your Twitter name and it draws out like a star map of who you connect to.
Oh, wow.
It's like 6 degrees of separation on Twitter. It's really cool.
Holy. Yeah, we got to talk about this. My Runkeeper is just exploding.
Yeah, I've got Runkeeper there a few times.
That is sick. Let's talk about this. So, it's even got some hashtags in there.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, the ones that are really highlighted are the ones that, hey, Bill, you made the top of my list there.
For what?
I don't know. You're just one of the ones that's highlighted orange.
Yeah, probably this creepy guy.
So then if I hover over you, I get you, Andrew, and Home Server Show, and Ian Dixon, and Zite App, Z-I-T-E-A-P-P.
Yeah, that's the news reader. Yeah, Zine, I think it's called.
Zine App?
Yeah, so I'll read a story I like, and I pop it up on it, and you can tweet right from it on the iPad or iPhone. It's pretty neat.
Okay. Christian, you doing all right? You're awful quiet out there.
I'm testing one of our podcast discussion things. Pretty cool. This Rain Meter app.
Yeah, I like Rain Meter.
Yeah.
All
right. I'll be right back. Someone's stirring into.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll wait. There. We'll wait for you. You bet.
2 seconds. Thanks.
Okay.
Sarah's asking in the chat if we can talk about updating Firefox.
Oh. Sure. Who? Anybody? I don't. I wouldn't know. I don't use that crap.
No, neither do I.
Oh, I'm gonna take it for that one.
yeah, you just got a big hey.
I know. Well, if somebody upstairs would be kind enough to bring me a glass of ice water, that'd be great.
Oh.
You're gonna get slapped for that.
That did get recorded. Oh, I probably will. Yeah, not after those jabs. I'm a glutton for punishment. That's for sure. All right, as soon as Bill get back, we will get rolling. So,
Andrew, have any idea how to customize this thing?
No, I haven't played with it that much.
A bit confused.
But I've seen some pretty cool customizations. I think, what's the site?
DeviantArt, I think, has a lot of people who've done really funky looking desktops out of it.
Yeah.
Mention map. Like it. Interesting. But you have to have a Twitter account. And Sarah doesn't have a Twitter account.
So she's not being stalked on Twitter.
You know, she had a Twitter account for a while and she dropped it. Oh, hey, while we're waiting for Bill to come back, Christian, on June 30th, you get to take the night off.
Why? What's June 30th?
So Andrew and I and Sarah and Michelle are going to do the home tech, but we're going to do it from a couple's perspective. So the gals are going to. We thought we'd spare you the.
Oh, all right.
The gals.
I mean, we could go there if we wanted to.
Well, if you want to, that you'd be welcome to. But it could be a night off if you want to.
All right.
So the gals will be here, and we're going to talk about tech, family tech, and that kind of stuff. So it'll be kind of fun.
Cool.
Let's see. When school done for you?
I'm done. June 8th is my last day.
Oh, wow. You guys go all the way into June.
Yeah, but we don't start till like September 10th. So.
Yeah. See, the schools here start early, so my son graduates Saturday.
Yeah.
But they start like August 15th.
Yeah.
So you pay for it one way or another.
True.
You back, Bill? His video froze up on me.
Am I good yet?
Are you there?
Working? Yeah, Andrew, I'm here.
Andrew's got his – he's on mute. And he's – you must be joking with Michelle.
Oh, okay. Was.
Oh, that's good. You weren't making fun of me, were you?
No. I was wondering what she was about to do.
Okay. You guys ready?
Yeah. Ready to go.
Let's get her done.
Spawn ready.
Let's double check the recording. I hate to get this thing started and not have that rolling. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, we got a video.
Yep. Yeah, don't. I told you. Don't jinx it.
Except for Bill. Got a still of
Bill. Yeah, Bill is still. That's all right.
He's doing all right for me.
Okay. It's, you know, that must be the way Skype handles this group chat, because we have that on the Home Server Show from time to time too, where it freezes up for me, but it's fine for everybody else. So it must be this weird way it connects all the calls together.
True. Yeah.
Interesting. Because
Christian, you are super clear to me.
Yeah.
I mean, your video is awesome. And Andrew, this is the best I've seen you yet. So,
well, it actually says my connection's good for a change. Yeah. Usually it says I've got like, you know, two little orange.
Yeah, call quality's good. On the so thing. Yeah. We can talk a little bit about that when we talk about Skype. All right, here we go. 25. This is. Oh, there we go. We'll try it again. That's right.
Beep.
Yeah, beep. In 3,